from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Imagine you've done everything right your entire life. Studied hard, worked hard, maybe even graduated at the top of your class, only to suddenly face the threat of deportation to a country that you know nothing about.
About 800,000 undocumented immigrants got good news on Friday when President Obama announced a new policy that looks like a vestige of the DREAM Act. The change means that some immigrants age 30 or younger who came to the United States before they turned 16 will be given work visas and will no longer face threat of deportation. We'll discuss the policy shift with supporters and critics. That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Declaring that a new executive action on his part was neither amnesty, immunity, a path to citizenship, or a permanent fix, but the right thing to do, President Obama announced on Friday that some 800,000 immigrants, 30 years old or younger, who came to the United States before they were 16, would not face deportation and would be given work visas and be eligible legally to obtain driver's licenses and college tuition scholarships. Under the president's order, illegal immigrants here for at least 5 consecutive years with no criminal record who have graduated a U.S. high school, earned a GED, or served in the military would not only not face deportation, they would be eligible to apply for a 2-year work permit with no limit on renewals. This population is the same one protected by the DREAM Act, which goes much further and has failed congressional passage since first introduced back in 2001. The president made his announcement on a day marking the 30th anniversary of Plyer v. Doe, the U.S. Supreme Court decision which established eligibility for children to a public education through high school, regardless of immigration status. And in this opening forum hour, we take up the executive decision. Joining us first from Washington, D.C. is Michael Doyle, reporter with the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers. Michael Doyle, good to have you. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Let me begin by asking you about this in conjunction with the DREAM Act, because the requirements are similar, but that offered a path to citizenship. And, of course, we're hearing from those who are upset about this executive order, which is really what it is, that it involves some kind of amnesty. And yet the president said it is not amnesty.
Well, first of all, the use of the word amnesty is politically loaded. It is the term chosen by opponents of those who want to offer a pathway to citizenship. Earned legalization is the term preferred by advocates. But setting the terminology aside, I don't think it's fair to call the president's proposal or policy amnesty. There is not a path to citizenship. It is strictly a 2-year limited work authorization, and it's not granted automatically. The individual immigrants will have to apply and be accepted, putting a big work burden on the immigration authorities. So I think by any fair-minded definition, this would not be considered either amnesty nor earned legalization of any kind.
This came right from the executive, that is from the president himself, bypassing Congress, and in some criticism that's been put forward, perhaps overstepped legal bounds. We'll talk about that as we move along in the program here. But from your perspective, Michael Doyle, I'm wondering if you can give us a genesis of this. It actually, in many ways, goes to Janet Napolitano and Homeland Security, doesn't it?
Technical terms, it was not an executive order. The decision was made by the Department of Homeland Security, offering what is called a prosecutorial discretion. Clearly, it was the president's policy, but it was implemented through the Department of Homeland Security. There's been some discussion about this for quite a while, and honestly, this marks somewhat of a reversal of the position. Last year, Secretary Napolitano was asked whether the administration would administratively seek to protect the DREAM Act population from deportation, and her answer to a state congressional committee seemed to be no. This has Republicans upset because it seems to be a reversal of a position. But there has been some longstanding discussion about doing this in light of the fact that Congress has failed for a year or for a decade to pass the underlying DREAM Act, which goes much farther.
As I understand it, though, this is a form of prosecutorial discretion. It's called deferred action. And it was done, I guess, when Cuban emigres came here and when Haitian orphans came here, even done to protect some of the Syrians who were escaping.
Well, that's right, and it's been used to protect certain populations. This is, by some of the scholars I talked to, the would be the largest coverage of any population for deferred action. And it bears repeating that this is not an automatic extension of residency rights to the population. They will still have to apply if they have felonies or certain serious misdemeanors on their record. They will not be eligible, and eligibility is not guaranteed just because you meet the age or residency requirements.
They still need to enter or leave with authorization only. And also, I think it ought to be added here, the next administration, or for that matter, President Obama, could cancel.
That's correct. President Obama says that it essentially is giving himself 2 years to see whether he can give Congress more impetus to move the DREAM Act. If Mitt Romney, the presumptive Republican nominee, wins office, he'll be faced with the dilemma of whether he would continue this policy or reverse it. And interestingly, on Sunday, Governor Romney was very hard to pin down on what he thought about this policy. He would not commit to reversing it.
Well, Representative Steve King, who's a Republican from Iowa, said he would file suit. What about that in the wake of
well,
that kind of
Congressman King says a lot of things, and he does represent a constituency of people who are critical of immigration reform. Congressman King, with all due respect, is not taken very seriously as a legislator. He does articulate a conservative, skeptical perspective. He did say that he'd file suit. I think the next step to honestly pay attention to, there will be almost certainly congressional hearings. A California Congressman, Ken Calvert, who's on the Judiciary Committee, has called for hearings, and there almost certainly will be some in the House, giving them a venue to, at the very least, criticize the president for the process, even if the policy they may not want to touch.
Talking with Michael Doyle, who's with us from Washington, reporter with the Washington Bureau of the McClatchy Newspapers, what's the sense in the nation's capital about how much this may have been done because the president has always said he wanted this to be done on principle, in other words, or for humanitarian reasons and politically? I mean, you mentioned Governor Romney, and certainly he's been walking the eggshells here thinking of the Hispanic vote, and one would presume that President Obama, too, is thinking of the Hispanic vote.
Well, hilariously, David Plouffe, one of the key White House advisors, was pressed on the Sunday talk shows Sunday as to whether there was a political motive behind the president's action, and Mr. Plouffe said no. Clearly, politics were part of it, but you know what? The president is a politician, and this is a political environment he's working in. The consensus of the people that I've talked to on the Hill and elsewhere is that the president made a very adroit move. He put Governor Romney in the corner, where Mr. Romney, trying to appeal to the Latino voters, would be loath to criticize the president's action. The president made a move that was very attractive to a Latino electorate that is already predisposed to vote for the president. It's Congress is essentially powerless to overturn this. Every person that I've talked to seems to think this was a pretty well-played political move, and I suppose good policy is when you're able to combine politics and policy.
Michael Doyle, again with us from the nation's capital, reporter for the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers. And thank you so much, Michael Doyle, for joining us on Forum this morning.
My pleasure.
We're also joined now by a young woman. We'll just use her first name, Laura. She's a graduate of UC Santa Cruz, also a volunteer at Educators for Fair Consideration, which offers scholarships, legal services, and internships and networking to undocumented students. And Laura, if I have it right, you yourself, at least up until this point, have been an undocumented student. And what we keep hearing is that this has helped to bring the phrase that I keep reading is out of the shadows, the undocumented. You feel like you're out of the shadows here?
I feel that I definitely am, and I feel that it's even more so now. I have been participating with the Federal DREAM Act as a legislation to help it pass since 2010 more with greater strength, but definitely this has helped a lot of youth come out of the shadows. Like myself, I came from Guanajuato, Mexico at 1 year and 8 months old. I've lived in Napa my whole life. I've gone through the Napa Valley Unified School District, preschool, well, Head Start, when it existed out here, and all the way through high school. I graduated there, moved on to UC Santa Cruz. I graduated in 2009 with my bachelor's. And for all of this time, since I was a senior, I've had a petition by my legal permanent resident parents for me to adjust my status. and I have 12 years to go. And my siblings are U.S. citizens, so it's a very interesting position where my family is, where I have resident parents, citizen siblings, but I'm the only undocumented student still to this date. And it's been very difficult for a lot of youth who have gotten their college education or at least their high school education to continue working in minimum wage jobs. I've been working in restaurants since I was 15. My parents luckily have a restaurant now where I was able to get employment after college, but with this new policy, I'm going to definitely be able to exercise my degree.
Aren't you also thinking of going to law school?
I'm thinking of going to law school, and I've had the opportunity to volunteer with Educators for Fair Consideration and their legal case team to be able to get some experience, because that's definitely what I want to do.
And you would also like to see the Dream Act come to pass at long last,
Oh, definitely. I've heard about the Dream Act since I was in high school. I've pushed it and dreamt that it would be there by the time I graduated in order for me to really do what I want to do with the rest of my life. And this is a great step. It'll demonstrate that the Dream Act can work as a policy, as something that will bring, you know, a procedure. And in the Dream Act, there would be work permits, there would be eligibility for driver's licenses. The only difference here is that there is no path to eventual citizenship. And this policy will definitely demonstrate that it's a good option to pass the Dream Act.
I'm sure you, in reading about President Obama's announcement on Friday, probably came across the fact that a reporter for the Daily Caller, Neil Monroe, yelled out, "Why do you favor foreigners over American workers?" to the president. And eventually he came to that and said, "This is the right thing to do." But what do you say, I mean, speaking for many who've been through this experience and gone through the turmoil of it, that essentially you're a foreigner or you're not a citizen, and therefore you're taking a job perhaps from an American?
I say that I am an American. I've been here again since I wasn't even 2 years old when I came here, so I was raised to be as an American student. My teachers imparted in me all the values that all of my other peers have, so I feel as American as the next person, and the opportunity for a path to residency is the only thing that makes me different from somebody born here.
Laura, I thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you. Laura, again, is a graduate of UC Santa Cruz and a volunteer at Educators for Fair Consideration, and we're going to move along and talk to the guests who will be with us for the hour. Mark Krikorian is Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, author of How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration. Good to have you here, Mark Krikorian. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
We also have with us here in studio Michael Tan, who's staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union Immigration Rights Project, IRP. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Glad to have you both. And Mark Krikorian, let me begin with you. I presume you feel that the president's overstepped his boundaries here.
Yeah, clearly, because the real issue here is not whether illegal immigrants brought here as children should be legalized. That's an important debate. We should have it. I've written repeatedly for years now that some narrow version of something like the Dream Act, one that covered people brought here as infants and toddlers, that also had some enforcement provisions to make sure we didn't end up in the same boat 10 years down the road, something like that has much to recommend it. The question is, who makes immigration law, and or who makes any form of law? And it's Congress that passes laws. The president a year ago or last year was right when he said he didn't have the authority to do this. He's done it anyway, essentially out of political desperation. And if Congress lets it stand, and Congress can, in fact, stop it by withholding funds, but I don't see them doing it. If Congress lets it stand, they have permitted a new precedent that a number of years down the road, you're going to see, say, a Republican president who can't get Congress to give him a capital gains tax cut. And it's essential in his mind. It's an emergency measure, and he's just going to do it anyway. And I'm not sure what grounds anybody would object to that kind of usurpation on.
And I'll ask you about the question that Neil Monroe threw out, despite the fact that it was perhaps impolitic of him or intemperate of him to do so. Does this favor foreigners over American workers?
Sure it does, in some sense, in that, look, we have 8%+ unemployment. Unemployment among young workers is much, much higher than that. And what we're doing is adding hundreds of thousands of new people to the labor market, plus ensuring that their parents will be able to stay, because that's an indirect effect of this if it goes into effect, at a time when, you know, Americans, even American college students, college graduates, are not able to find work. So there's clearly the policy itself is something that needs to be looked at hard, long and hard. But the real question is, who does the looking? In other words, where does this debate happen? Congress is the only place this kind of debate and decision can happen. The president is acting outside his constitutional authority. And in an emergency where there's a civil war going on, say, maybe you could justify that. This is, there's no justification for this, and the people applauding it are going to live to regret the precedent that the president is setting.
Well, many are attributing it to political reasons, as we heard earlier from Michael Doyle in Washington. But this president, and I'd like your comment on this, this president has been pretty aggressive in deportations. He's deported some 1.1 million in 3 years. That's more than any other president since the 50s.
Well, actually, Bush, when you add up the 8 years, deported more people. But there's been a steady increase in deportations from the Clinton administration, and that increase has actually stopped with this administration. It's just that it hasn't declined much. So, yes, there's no question the president has not pulled the plug on enforcement, all of it, as he, frankly, his inclinations would lead in that direction. But, you know, the fact is a lot of that is, I don't know how to put it. I mean, it's political window dressing. It's in other words, he maintains a pose of toughness on immigration in order to be able to try to get away with these kind of legalization measures. And this isn't the only one. The thing that he announced Friday is only the latest in a long string of actions he's taken to weaken enforcement. So there's no question some enforcement is happening. The president is not some caricature of an open borders person, but his inclinations are unquestionably in the direction of weakening enforcement.
Mark Krikorian, again, is with us from Washington. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies and the author of How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration. Michael Tan's here in studio. He's staff attorney with the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, Immigrants' Rights Project. And what about the notion that we hear from Mark Krikorian and others, Michael Tan, that the president has overstepped his authority here, or the legal boundaries that are really congressional and not executive?
Right. Well, I think that's incorrect. There's no question from a legal perspective that this policy falls well within the bounds of the president's authority. This isn't an end run around Congress. As we heard earlier from Michael Doyle, this policy does not confer legal status on anyone. Only Congress can do that. That's why we need the DREAM Act. And the president made that very clear in announcing this policy. This policy is really an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. And as in any other law enforcement context, the immigration authorities are empowered to set priorities, to decide how they're going to use their limited law enforcement resources and, say, go after the violent criminal offenders and terrorists instead of the honor students, the nannies, and the gardeners. Deferred action, the particular kind of prosecutorial discretion being used here, has been around for a long time, as we heard earlier, at least 40 years. It's been used for many different classes of people. Most recently, it was used for the widows and widowers of deceased U.S. citizens so they could stay in the country while their legal status is being resolved. So I don't think there's any serious legal question as to whether the president has the power to do this. That said, it's just a stopgap, and it's not enough. It's not going to give the dreamers like Laura what they need, which is a path to citizenship. For that, we need legislation. We need the DREAM Act. We need Congress to act.
Well, you see this as incremental or a temporary measure at best then, don't you?
I do. I mean, you know, by its own terms, it only defers the deportation subject to renewal of people in Laura's situation for 2 years. And, of course, they're allowed to apply for work authorization. So I think it's an important first step. It relieves dreamers in Laura's situation from the nightmare of possibly being deported from the only home they've ever known. It gives them a chance for at least a time to pursue their educational and career goals and try to realize that American dream. But it's not a permanent fix. As President Obama said, these young people are Americans in heart and mind, just not on paper. And they deserve an opportunity to earn permanent lawful status in our country. So I think it's incumbent on all members of Congress to pass the DREAM Act and set the dreamers on a path to citizenship.
Let's be frank here. The obstacle mainly has been the Republicans.
That's right. Congressional Republicans have prevented the final passage of the DREAM Act. which is very unfortunate. You know, historically, the DREAM Act has enjoyed bipartisan support. It's overwhelmingly supported by the American people. I think the polls in 2010 showed 70% of the electorate supported DREAM. We've had calls for DREAM from all sectors of society, military leaders, educators, business leaders. Mayor Bloomberg in New York, Drew Faust, the president of Harvard. Everyone thinks DREAM is a good idea. And we came really close in 2010. DREAM passed the House. It won a majority of the votes in the Senate, but came 5 votes short of cloture. And, you know, that's because, you know, it's become very difficult for congressional Republicans to, you know, stand for anything that's going to be criticized as a quote-unquote amnesty program. And so you see this dynamic where former Republican supporters of the DREAM have sort of stepped away from the legislation. Senator McCain has changed his view. Senator Lugar, Senator Hatch, who was one of the original co-sponsors, didn't vote when the bill came up for cloture. So, you know, I think it's a really difficult moment. And part of this policy is a challenge on Congress members from both parties to step up and get serious about the DREAM Act again.
I'm going to give out the phone number. I know there are many of you who want to weigh in here and let us know what your sentiments are in the wake of this announcement made by President Obama on Friday. You may also have questions or comments for either of our guests or both of them. And if you'd like to join us, you can do that now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, toll-free from wherever or however you're listening to Forum, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or join us by going to our Facebook page. Let me just get some thoughts from you, Mark Krikorian, about the idea that the DREAM Act has overwhelming majority support, and this seems to be a path to lead there eventually.
Well, I mean, you know, in a democracy, if people want something, the people want something strongly enough over enough of a period of time, it gets passed. The fact is the DREAM Act failed in 2010 because not all of the Democrats voted for it. And then in the first 2 years of this administration, before that, the DREAM Act was never even brought up by the Democratic leadership, even though they had supermajorities, and they could well have passed it early in 2009. The DREAM Act was never intended as a standalone piece of legislation that was designed to fix a discrete problem that Americans rightly are, you know, sympathetic to the people caught in this problem. I am too. I've called for some version, a limited version of the DREAM Act. But the DREAM Act was developed as a marketing tool for a broader amnesty, for what is known in the jargon as comprehensive immigration reform. And kind of the point of it was to say, look, here's young Jose. He's brought here when he was 2 months old, valedictorian in high school. When he gets out of MIT, his goal in life is to hunt down and kill America's enemies. Therefore, all 11 million illegal aliens need amnesty. That was the point of the DREAM Act. It was never intended to be a standalone piece of legislation.
Excuse me, we're coming up on a break here, Mark Krikorian. Michael Tan, presumably you don't see that similarly in terms of the intention behind the DREAM Act.
Well, no. I mean, I think there was a point in which DREAM was bound up with the fate of comprehensive immigration reform. I think we're in a different moment where Congress, you know, has started looking at DREAM as a standalone bill, and, you know, the co-sponsors of DREAM mean it to help the DREAMers. So I think the dynamics are different, and we should be passing the DREAM Act.
We'll hear from you when we return. This figure of 800,000 undocumented immigrants has been coming out. Actually, Pew Research says 1.4 million may be affected by this, particularly, I might add, in some states that are very important politically, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and Florida. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. About 800,000 undocumented immigrants got good news on Friday. President Obama announced a new policy that looks like a vestige of the DREAM Act. And, of course, we're talking about the DREAM Act as well, but also that change that the president brought attention to on Friday, because it will mean that some immigrants age 30 or younger who came to the United States before they turned age 16 will be given work visas and will no longer face the threat of deportation. We're talking about the policy shift with both supporters and critics. Michael Tan with us in studio, staff attorney for the ACLU, Immigrants' Rights Project, and Mark Krikorian with us by phone from Washington, is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, also author of How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration. We spoke earlier with Michael Doyle, a reporter with the Washington Bureau of McClatchy Newspapers, and with a young woman who wanted to be identified only as Laura, a graduate of UC Santa Cruz and an undocumented student now actually thinking about going to law school. We'll also hear from you. And again, you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or alternatively also go to our Facebook page. And let's go right to your calls here without tarrying. And we'll begin with a caller from New York City. Fahad, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you.
My question is actually that, first of all, I want to thank Mr. President for passing this law. For me, it's very appreciative because I'm as an immigrant living in this country. The question that I have for the guest that this law is definitely a positive act towards to immigrants, but when it comes to the decision-making to the desk of those who make decisions and the immigration offices, those are the ones that make have the choices to whether accept or reject the applications, having pointing out to many problems or very minimum, things that they may ask the applicant. For example, I can put it out to my case that I had, I was due to the citizenship this year. When I applied, I was rejected because of the fact that I had to leave California and come to New York for employment, and even my marriage was rejected. So that's definitely will be a problem for this law when coming to the desk of those who make the decision.
Well, I'm glad you bring this up because I think, Michael Tan, you have indicated and you're on record as saying there's going to be problems with implementing this, aren't there?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. The process for implementing this policy is being rolled out as we speak, and we're hopeful that the procedures that are set up are accessible and transparent, and do a good job of making sure that the people who are eligible get the administrative relief and the people who aren't don't. But I think it remains to be seen. We're going to have to watch for that. One point I would like to make, particularly for folks who either are thinking of seeking this relief or who work with Dreamers who will be seeking this relief, I think there's a very serious concern in the advocacy community right now that notarios and other unscrupulous folks are going to be preying on people who are really desperate and eager to apply for deferred action. And so I would just recommend that people be very careful and try to consult with reputable organizations before they go off and work with someone who may be trying to take advantage of them. In particular, United We Dream, which you can Google, is going to be doing a lot of community education around how people can apply for this relief.
I'm assuming, Mark Krikorian, you're not quite as sanguine as Mr. Tan about implementation.
No, I mean, it's, any large program like this, especially in immigration, brings with it a whole host of administrative problems. We're talking about initially up to 800,000 applicants and hundreds of thousands of more over a period of years. And, you know, they have to prove they were here before age 16. Well, presumably much of that will be done through school records. School records are not particularly secure, and so I guarantee you, as we speak, document fraud people are printing up fake school transcripts. Is every one of those going to be confirmed where the officer calls up the school and says, please look up your records and check this? No, of course not. They're going to end up rubber stamping most of these applications.
Well, on the other end, I wonder about those who may have done homeschooling or have had...
Exactly. That's another. I mean, it's less of a problem probably numerically, but that's also there. And, you know, the fact is there's going to be a lot of political pressure on the adjudicators in the Immigration Service to move things along. And you're going to end up with something very much like what we saw in the 1986 amnesty, where huge numbers of people who were ineligible ended up getting amnesty anyway. The farm worker part of the amnesty was probably the most almost amusing, if it weren't so serious, where people claimed to have picked watermelons off of trees and dug cherries out of the ground, all kinds of things. Those people got legal status because there was no way administratively to actually enforce the rules.
All right. I want to get more callers on. We're going to go to Orlando, Florida, and we'll welcome Art. Good morning, Art.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I have a little problem. My mother and father waited 15 years to come to this country legally. So I have a problem with that. And I'd like to get an answer from somebody as to like, does that sound fair to us, being that this president is so into fairness? How is that fair to people that waited 15 years outside the country to get in?
I suspect, Michael Tan, even from your perspective, it's not fair, is it?
Well, yeah, I think that's a very difficult question, you know, and I appreciate the concern that you're expressing. You know, and I think it's hard. You know, I think there's a conversation to be had about, let's say, the kind of system we might have wanted to be in place when these kids were brought over by their parents. But, you know, the reality is that these kids are here and they've grown up here. And, you know, they're effectively American in almost every sense of the word. And so the question we're facing is what are we going to do with these young people? Are we going to deport them to a so-called native country that they don't know? They may not speak the language.
You mentioned,
they have no ties,
I believe, 70% are from Mexico originally. I think that's the figure.
Mm-hmm.
So
that sounds about right. Yeah. That sounds about right. You know, or are we going to set them on a path to citizenship? We're going to recognize that they are, in effect, American, and enable them to get right with the law and earn citizenship. So, you know, I think it's a really tough policy decision. You know, the course is clear.
I want to thank the caller and actually get another caller on. That's you, John. Join us. You're on.
Morning. Thanks Morning. For taking my call. I have a couple of questions for Mr. Kerkorian. First, what is he doing to end the Republican official policy logjam that keeps President Obama from getting anything substantive done on not only immigration but everything else, because the Republicans want to get him unelected? Second question, I'd like to know where his people came from and when he was an immigrant and how well he was welcomed. And if he came after the American Revolution, I'd wonder when he was planning on leaving, because he didn't come here early enough. That's kind of a rhetorical question, obviously, but I'd like to hear his responses.
It's you, Mark Kerkorian.
Questions, obviously, as a kind of advocacy setup, but the fact is that I don't speak for Republican legislators or anything else. But the reason things don't progress, whether it's immigration or not, in Congress, is because there's disagreement. The fact is that not just Republicans and Democrats disagree on immigration, but even within the two parties, there's enormous disagreement. In fact, because immigration is not a right-left issue, really, it's more of an up-down issue. It's elites in both parties versus the rank and file of both parties. And, you know, that leads to, you know, things not happening in Congress. And, in fact, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the prerequisite of what we need to see in immigration is a commitment to enforce whatever the laws are before people will have any confidence that changing that new laws that are changed will actually be enforced. And you'll just end up with more situations like the previous caller, whose parents spent years waiting in line to legally immigrate, and in fact basically have been shown to have been chumps. They were duped because they tried to follow the rules. They paid the price. Those who broke the rules reap benefits.
Well, since that listener asked you about your own background, I'm looking at an email here from Dave, who says he's going to hazard a guess that Mr. Kerkorian is of Armenian descent. If so, I'll hazard another guess that his forebears probably emigrated here under far more free immigration laws, and depending on which year they came, no laws whatsoever. And if that's not true of his specific ancestors, he's surely aware that holds true for the forerunners of many, many other Armenian Americans.
Sure it does. I mean, we had very different immigration rules in the past. We also had we had different occupational safety and health rules. We had different food safety rules. The fact is that as the modern administrative state has developed, the whole body of government regulation has become more extensive, and immigration is simply part of that. The idea that the relative lack of, the small number of immigration regulations we had, say, 100 or 200 years ago, is somehow applicable today is like saying that other aspects of law from a century or two centuries ago should also be applied to today. And yet, you know, nobody would make that argument. It would be absurd on its face.
Here's another listener who says, all due respect to you, Mr. Krikorian, the only American demographic affected by illegal immigrants in terms of jobs or high school dropout. Seems to me, in a world where China graduates more honor students than American graduates any students, the immigrant steal jobs meme is a bit of a red herring.
I'm not sure what that was, but, I mean, immigrants compete. The bulk of immigrants are working in, have less, relatively little education and work in jobs that require relatively little skill. And they're competing directly with tens of millions of Americans. Young people, people with low levels of education, disproportionately minorities, as well as anyone else who's marginal to the labor market, say an ex-con or recovering addict. Anybody like that is in competition with low-skilled immigrant workers. And the idea that there are no such people, that there are no Americans who will do this work, displays a real provincialism. What it really means is the person who says this himself doesn't know any Americans who would do that kind of work. It doesn't mean that there are no Americans who
do that. Well, apropos of that, I'm going to go to Michael Tan again of the ACLU to respond to a comment on our website from a listener who writes, what concerns me is adding so many more workers to the labor pool will continue to keep American unemployment rate down, since these foreign workers will compete directly with American workers for jobs in America. Will there be a recap on this? Will there be a cap on this, excuse me? 800,000 is a big pill to swallow. 8 million is even bigger.
Right. Thanks for that question. You know, actually, there's a lot of evidence that the DREAM Act will help rather than hurt the American economy. And that's so for several reasons. First, the DREAM Act means greater educational opportunity and better jobs for the Dreamers, which will mean more taxable income. I think there's a study from UCLA estimating that the lifetime earnings of the Dreamers ranges between $1.4 trillion to $3.6 trillion. There's other research showing that if you remove the uncertainty around legal status, immigrants are far more likely to invest in the U.S. economy, to open bank accounts, buy homes, open businesses, and so that's an engine of economic growth. There's other evidence that it would the DREAM Act would save taxpayers' monies by sort of relieving burdens on public benefits and harms to public health. But I also think that, you know, there's a recognition that these are folks that we actually want in our labor force. These are talented, industrious, creative, motivated people, like the many immigrants before him, before them, who have been so central to American prosperity. It's not for nothing that in the last decade, I think it's like 25% of the successful high-tech startups were founded or co-founded by immigrants like Google. And I actually believe that the future Steve Jobs and, you know, Bill Gates and et cetera are among the dreamers, that these are people we want in our labor force and that we have an interest. We all have an interest in helping them succeed.
Again, Michael Tan here in studio, staff attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union Immigrants' Rights Project. I'm going to read some more of your comments before I go to more of your calls, because they show a kind of, variety of responses politically. Here's a comment on the website that says, this is a simple case of vote buying. He's helping some kids in order to buy the votes of an entire community. It's a simple technique Obama picked up in Chicago that displays his corruption. I normally wouldn't vote Republican, but a cynical move like this is repugnant, although not nearly as repugnant as his not prosecuting bankers for their numerous felonies. Another listener writes, it's ironic that Republicans exhibit such hostility toward Latinos, who are generally a socially conservative community. I hope the Republicans continue their current lines of attack so that they drive the entire Latino community into the Democratic or at least independent political camp. When Republicans show their true colors in situations like these, they do more to help Democrats than we could do alone. Another listener, Dan, writes, please call this what it is, an attempt to try and distract his base, President Obama's base, from the reality that he is worse than his predecessor on nearly everything that was supposedly important to them. Guantanamo still open, more troops in Afghanistan after drawdown than the day he took office, more whistleblower prosecutions than all prior presidents combined, four times the number of drone attacks, and Bush NDAA signed on New Year's Eve after he said he would not. This is a joke, and it would be nice of you to point that out. You did, so thank you. He also says, Dan concludes by saying, he does all this and we'll get reelected. What's he going to do to us when that is no longer important? Let me get some of your calls on. We'll go to the caller in Daly City. Mary, join us. Welcome.
Thank you. So what is to prevent anyone from saying, well, why should I follow the rules? Why should I do anything legally? I will just bring my children, and they can get a work permit, and maybe I'll end up getting a work permit or even citizenship. We had this problem before in 1986 where, in theory, it was supposed to stop illegal immigration, but in fact, it just increased it because people figured, well, there may be another 1986-type bill, so I might as well take my chances and do it the illegal way and get ahead.
What about that argument, Michael Tan, that this will just perhaps enhance or increase or somehow even be a catalyst for more illegal immigration?
Right. So I actually don't think that's the case. It's important to clarify that this this policy doesn't apply to newcomers. It only applies to people who were here as of last Friday and living in the U.S. For 5 years continuously. So anyone that comes here tomorrow to try to reap the benefits of this, they're just not eligible. And, you know, I think more broadly, given how comprehensive reform has fared over the last couple of years, I think, you know, it'd be a pretty bad gamble to come over with the hopes that, you know, you're going to be able to legalize. So, you know, I just don't think that's a serious concern here.
It is to you, Mark Krikorian, a serious concern, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, first of all, obviously the thing the president announced would not apply to somebody who snuck over the border tomorrow. On the other hand, of course, if he just buys a phony birth certificate from Mexico and a phony school transcript, then it would apply to him, number one. Number two, it sends a more general message that we are unserious and feckless about enforcing immigration laws, making it more attractive for people to consider sneaking in and keeping their head down long enough until, you know, the next amnesty comes.
Some would argue that that's been the case for many, many years now.
Yes, exactly. Because we haven't been serious about enforcing our law. In 1986, there was a deal, and the deal was we tie up the loose ends of earlier mistakes by legalizing people, but going forward, we would have much more stringent enforcement. But once the amnesty part happened, the political will to have future enforcement disappeared, and that's the problem. With the current proposals for so-called comprehensive immigration reform is that they would involve legalization and increased immigration in exchange for promises of future enforcement, and no one believes those promises, and with good reason.
And Michael Tan, you say what?
Well, you know, I think it's true there has been a history of lax enforcement, and that's part of why we've gotten to the situation today where we have the Dreamers, people who have lived here their entire lives. You know, and I think that's why there's a recognition, a broad bipartisan recognition, and I know Mr. Krikorian has stood up for a narrower version of the DREAM Act, that we have to do something with these young people, these people who are American in all but name alone. And you know, that's why we need the DREAM Act.
And we need more calls. Let's go to Christina. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yes. Second, the points that your guest made on the economic benefits of having the 10-plus million people in the United States be able to contribute fully. We see how the corporations are sitting on their money and they're not hiring people for jobs, but we also see that keeping everybody in the shadows and demonizing the immigrant population in the last several years has not brought economic strength to our country. It has not created jobs. I truly believe that it's actually stalled the process, because when people are working, they contribute and they pay taxes, they buy things, and it's kind of like a trickle up. And keeping people afraid of not knowing what tomorrow is really doesn't help them contribute to our economy. And we all know that legal immigration in this country is so ineffective, and it's virtually impossible, especially when you come from countries like Mexico where you need to actually have money in order to be able to apply to be a legal resident of the United States. And I would love to ask you, Michael, to possibly create a show one day to show your listeners how hard it is to actually come from Mexico and other Latin American countries and actually get through the immigration system here in this country.
Well, we've certainly done shows that have focused on the difficulties getting through and the coyotes and all of the obstacles and formidable they are that are faced, and we'll certainly revisit those in the future. I thank you, Christina, for the call. I want to revisit some of the emails that are coming in here, or visit them, I should say. Janice writes, thank you, President Obama, for allowing my nephew's partner to come into the light this week. Jasmine was brought to the U.S. from Mexico when she was 5, graduated with honors in physics and French from a state university with heroic help from her family, and until now has been unable to work at a paying job or drive a car for fear of deportation. She and her family are ecstatic, as am I. But sort of on the other side of things, here's somebody named Kurt who writes, what is disturbing is that these aliens will be issued work permits and compete directly with unemployed American workers. Another issue is that there's no cap. It may be 800,000 or it may be 8 million or who knows. Please put a cap on it. And lastly, the processing and research involved. Who's going to pay for it? Wouldn't many millions fall through the cracks to our detriment? Bad deal for Americans. Nobody thinks DREAM is a good idea. And a question maybe for you, Michael Tan, from Natalie about the DREAM Act. Under the DREAM Act, would those given citizenship be able to sponsor their parents or other family members who brought them into the country for residency or citizenship?
That's right. They would be. And I think that's important. The principle of family unity is one that's written into our immigration laws. You know, when we admit people to full membership in American society, we make a commitment to them. We tell them, hey, you can bring your family with you. And that's because we don't want to be in the business of separating parents and children when we admit the kids as members of American society. So, you know, that it's a point of controversy around the DREAM Act, but it's important to respect that principle of family unity that's so central to our immigration laws.
And we'll bring more of our callers on. We go to BJ next. Good morning, BJ.
I just want to say this about the comment about these people are Americans all but on paper. Our whole society is based on paper. You know, people like me, I came from India. I grew up in India. I am not an American anyway except on paper because I have the green card and my citizenship. So changing something as fundamental as that and taking it so lightly, to me, is absurd. You know, the whole basis of this should be that if the laws are wrong, change the laws. You know, the ACLU applies the law, in so many cases. But now that the law is inconvenient, they're going to try and change the law. But first, let's change the law and then bring these regulations. Right now, what they're doing is illegal, and it's just absurd to me. I don't see the point of the arguing about this with such articulateness and everything.
All right. We thank you for your call. That will go on as an editorial call. And here's a listener named Shankar who writes, Mark Krikorian, when an argument cannot be made on its merits, it's typical for the right wing to whine about process. After complaining that the Health Care Act was rammed through, despite getting a filibuster-proof 60 Senate votes, Krikorian now complains that Congress should have done what President Obama did. Why wasn't Krikorian writing or agitating for the DREAM Act against his friends in Congress if he thinks his right-wing allies in Congress were unjustly holding it up?
First of all, process is a good deal of what democracy is about. The whole point is that we go through certain steps of, having hearings, passing legislation in one chamber and then the other and all the rest of it. That's kind of the whole point to constitutionalism is process, number one. Number two, the DREAM Act as it exists is a terrible piece of legislation. Not only does it admit people who came as teenagers, which is really not what people have in mind, but it also has no enforcement provisions so that we'll just end up with another DREAM Act 10 years down the road. And it doesn't address the issue that an earlier caller brought up about the parents of these illegal immigrants who did this to their children would be able to benefit. And the whole point, it seems to me, of a defensible argument for something like the DREAM Act is to ensure that the adults who knew what they were doing, who put their children in this predicament, must never be allowed to benefit in any way from the amnesty that we would extend, theoretically, to these young people.
And you say what to that, Michael Tan?
Well, you know, I think that's a very heartless and inhumane position to take. I think that's tantamount to saying, hey, we're going to let you live here in our country and admit you to membership, but you don't get to have your family. And I think that's contrary to a lot of principles, to the principle of family unity and fundamental values included.
I think what Mr. Krikorian is saying is the children are or can be seen as innocent, but the parents defied our laws in coming here. There is a distinction between generations in that way, is there not?
Yeah, I think there's a distinction in terms of, right, kids have, you know, these dreamers do not have control over their what happened to them when they were children. They were brought into the country. That said, I still think if we are going to admit people to full membership, we should recognize their rights to family unity. People have families. You know, they want them with them. And that's an important value that we should respect.
Well, one more important question here before we conclude for you, Michael Tan. This is from our, and by the way, you can continue this discussion on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment once the program ends, or do it on our Facebook page. But here's Lori, who writes, "While I often support President Obama's perspectives, this gives me pause to worry about this. When my daughter, born and raised as a U.S. citizen, reaches college age and we are avidly applying for scholarships and grants to fund her education, to what extent will she and other citizen students like her be up against added competition for funds with undocumented students?"
Could I jump in here, Michael?
Yeah. We've got seconds left. I thought Michael Tan would want to respond to this, but go ahead.
My concern is not just the numbers involved, and this is a real concern, is the numbers. We're talking 800,000 up to 1.4 million people. But remember, this is something nobody mentions. 70% of these young people are from Mexico. Many of the rest are from elsewhere in Latin America. And they all will be given preference over through affirmative action preferences because of their Hispanic background.
There are seconds left, and Michael Tan, let's get a final rejoinder from you on that.
I don't think this is a serious concern. I think there are many examples in which particularly in the states that have made in-state tuition available so that undocumented students are able to go on the same basis as citizens and LPRs, at least pay the same tuition rate. And there hasn't been the worry about displacement, people losing spots because of this new influx of students. These are students who deserve to go to college. They're talented, and we should support them.
Well, we'll have to conclude it there. Thank you, Michael Tan from the ACLU. Thank you, Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies. Also, thanks to Michael Doyle of McClatchy Newspapers and Laura, a graduate of UC Santa Cruz and an undocumented student. Thank you, all our listeners. Another hour ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.